Welcome to a case closed review from ReverseThieves.com. In these short podcasts, we discuss our final thoughts on anime that finished up in the most recent season.
This time, we're wrapping up The Ancient Magus' Bride by Wit Studio, which is streaming on Crunchyroll. And this based on a manga series. As I mentioned when Kate was originally interested in this one, I feel like it's a very beautiful series, very interesting series, little problematic series, especially going in. I know a lot of people, as I mentioned, after like the first episode of the premise, are like, I'm out! And so Kate was like, oh, thank you for telling me that. And, you know, I think she stuck with it and enjoyed it. But I think, once again, it's worth mentioning just up front that the premise, if you didn't listen to our SWAT review, is that this half-fae, half-human wizard buys a girl to be both his apprentice and his bride. And, you know, and he's nicer to her than you might initially hope in such a scenario, but he is also very clearly a problem creature.
There are things to watch out for, but mm-hmm. that I was certainly, like you said, Al, you kind of prepped me a little bit. I went in a little bit with knowledge and then had to make some decisions. And while I can understand if people turned away, I do think that the series has a purpose mm-hmm. and addresses a lot of the problems at the beginning of this. And I think it has a really good payoff.
And more importantly, it not only addresses them, it realizes it has them in the first place.
Right,
which
yes.
I feel like a lot of manga is like, what? What would be wrong with this premise?
Yeah, so I feel like you're right. It acknowledges what's going on in the series. Because I think the other portion that you didn't quite mention yet mm-hmm. is that Chisei sells herself into, let's just call it slavery. Mm-hmm. She does not value her life. She has gone through a lot. She has become very, very isolated because she has this power to see spirits and other creatures, and it has really caused problems throughout her life. She's lost her mother in a suicide, and her father and brother disappeared. And so she's been shuffled around, and so at the beginning of this series, she is a teenager, and she doesn't value her life anymore. And so she makes this decision, kind of makes this deal with the auction house. And that's where we like, start the series from. So there is, like, not only is she sold in this way, but also she doesn't see a value in herself, which I think is also, at least for me, was very difficult to watch her behave in that manner and sort of give herself over to this life and say, well, I'll just live for you and whatever you want, that's fine because you've now given me a home. But again, I think that's all people question that of her.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't only question it of herself. Outside forces in the series are like, hey, yo, wait a minute. Maybe you need to think about this, and also I value you.
Yeah, you're like, so like I think you're a cool person. Why don't you?
and really ask her to ask more of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I wanted from the series. That's what I was concerned about. And the series has purpose in that. It is really about it's about a lot of things, but it is partially about this woman who has to learn to want to live. And I think that could be very hard for certain people to watch, and it certainly was hard for me to watch at times, but I felt as though it really came through in the end.
So yeah, I just wanted to touch on that before we go anywhere else. I mean, everything else is, you know, us explaining where our thoughts there came from, but I felt like, let's get that out of the way, because I feel like a lot of people, or at least certain viewers, that's going to be their major question. And then, like, all right, now that you've answered that one, I can now listen to the rest of this and judge from, you know, beyond that point.
So now, basically, we just talk about magic stuff for, for 20 more minutes.
Or what I really care about. I gotcha. Magic systems. Rin Tosuka explains magic systems. Excellent. This is the out part of the podcast.
I mean, the thing about this series is the magic is so awesome. I mean, that was something that I really enjoyed about the OVA, and it totally comes through in the TV series, is that it's just been a while since I watched a series where the magic looked so unique and beautiful, and it just has such a presence in the series that it's just magnificent to behold, I thought, so many times. Magic! Magic is important in this show!
So, Kate, you had a question.
Oh, yeah. Because I can't, like, really remember it.
Okay. So, your question is, what's the difference between mages and magicians in this? And so, I had two examples. I could have either used my Type Moon example or my White Wolf example. Kate played Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe and picked White Wolf. So, I'm gonna give you the White Wolf explanation. Is pretty much the same thing. So, in White Wolf, there are two kinds of mages. They're hedge mages, and then they're true mages. Hedge mages practice all kinds of craps, and true mages practice, like, sphere magic. And so, the three major differences are hedge magic is simpler and more limited. Anybody can generally learn it if they, you know, unless you have some kind of weird curse or restriction. You just have to put in the time and the effort. And while all magic is dangerous, it is safer than sphere magic. And true magic is just infinitely more powerful. It's more versatile. You can do more with it. If a hedge mage, say, is a person who, you know, let's say they have some kind of, like, pyrokinesis, like control of fire spirits. A sphere mage can do all that fire stuff and better, and then a whole bunch of other types of magic. But the problem is, very limited numbers of people can become sphere mages, and even then, they have to have an awakening. And it's more dangerous. And that's pretty much the difference. The magicians that we meet in Magus's Bride, anybody can be one if they study enough, like the armless guy and his apprentice. That's why he can just pick her up off the street and eventually teach her magic. Because as long as you're willing to put in the work, you can learn it, but it has less power. You can't do as much. But also, like in Mage of the Ascension, it is a little bit safer because you never see them super one casting spells, worrying about burning themselves out and dying, whereas Chisei is constantly in danger of that. And the other thing is, that's why Chisei is so valuable, why so many people either want her dead, want to, like, consume her, drain her, or want them for her own. She's one of the people who could still be a mage in this day and age, and thereby, even if they burn her out, she can still do fantastic wonders beyond that of just the magician. And the only other thing is, she's also a sleigh beggy, which also means that she has a big fey affinity, which is also why she so easily is able to be a mage. And that's a little different, but that's basically a fairy affinity, which also makes it easier to do her magic.
I was going to say, I feel the other component in this series is that they don't always seem to, but they tend to need a power source. So the fairies and the fae that help come and help them and, like, give them over to their power source. So I guess that's the other piece of it. And the fae lands in here. That's the other cool bit of magic. You know, they go there a few times. We see them all around. That's the things that she sees other things too, but that's one of the things that she's constantly seeing when they're around.
Also, remember, the other thing is magicians, they basically are, you know, they're a person with like a little personal battery, whereas mages in this thing, they're like portable generators. Mm-hmm. That's why also, and once again, her being a sleigh baggy, she also has even more than that. So that's why, once again, more people are converging on Shisei all the time, because she's just this fountainhead of energy.
And so, like I mentioned, there's also the Fae play a big part in many of these stories. And also, something that I didn't fully expect from the beginning of the series, maybe just because that's sort of the beginning component, but is there's a land of dragons in here that was some of my favorite parts of the series involved the dragons. And then we also have an antagonist who, in the form of Cartaphilus, who I didn't actually realize from the beginning that was going to be like the overarching storyline. I mean, you've read the manga, so mm-hmm. maybe that was more clear to you, but I liked that it was kind of unexpected. Like, okay, this character has shown up a couple of times, but then I liked how it kind of came together at the end.
Well, I mean, there's also Ashenai, who is definitely not a character who I feel like is going to be a recurring problem. He does seem weird enough that he might be one of those, like, characters who's like, I guess he's our ally this time for this one storyline. And then, you know, the next storyline, he's back to being, like, a complete monster. But I guess that's kind of the nature of the Fae and spirits like that. They are very aliens. You break some random rule, or you have some random thing that they want, and they're your friend this month, and they're your mortal enemy the next month.
They have their own reasons for doing mm-hmm, things. Mm-hmm. So, is Cartaphilus a mage? Or just a magical being?
So,
what's your interpretation?
He's like, I mean, he's based on a very old part of, like, essentially mystical Christianity. Because, I mean, he's Cartaphilus as a character in, like, real-world mythology is either a Jewish person or a Roman soldier who either insulted or injured Jesus on the cross and is cursed to wander the earth, basically atoning for that sin. So I kind of almost view him more like a mystical creature. He has the ability to do magic like a mage, but I feel like in the way that like a dragon could do magic, he's like beyond a mage. That's why even, you know, people like, you know, why even Elias is like super cautious, and Elias is a powerhouse in this series, but even he has to give pause before even thinking of going up against Cartaphilus, because he's this thing that has, although cursed, it has also given it great powers, both terrible and amazing.
And Cartaphilus is scary. Mm-hmm. I mean, the intensity in this show, especially the last 4 or 5 episodes, is oppressive. Like, it's so dark. And in general, this is such a dark series that almost hides its darkness at times, and then you almost forget in a moment that it's a very dark look in magic, and even the relationships with some of the Fae, who in stories just vary wildly from being super adorably magical to evil, and in here there's such a, like, a mix. But I really liked that this series had such a a dark look into the magic. Again, it made it feel different than a lot of things that I've seen.
I think just to expand on what you're saying, I think that it's also, and to bring back what we started at the beginning, it's also, magic is also super beautiful at times, and it's just, it's almost like its own natural world, like filled with beauty and wonder and amazing things, but it's easy to forget and sometimes get pulled in by the glorious majesty that, oh yeah, and this can be really dangerous and at times almost like immoral or just beyond good and evil. And if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time doing the wrong thing, you can just get steamrolled by this stuff. And then, and as you mentioned also, and there are also things out there that are just bad and want to do you harm and use you up and eat you up. And if you are not careful, they will.
And now that you say it like that too, Al, Elias as a character is, I think, even by the end, is still very mysterious. I mean, we learn sort of a bit about his origins, kind of, but he really is one of these creatures, you know. Sometimes it's hard to see him as good or evil. Sometimes he feels like too neutral, but he does have these moments where he doesn't understand his own feelings about things, almost in a naive way, and also just some of the choices that he makes are so hard to understand, and I feel like that's kind of the magical creature part of him, especially at the beginning, which I think is sort of part of the story, but at the beginning of the series, I didn't trust him at all. I mean, maybe it was just because of the way that the series started, but I was like, no, you haven't explained anything. I can't trust you. I can't believe you. I can't put my faith in what's happening here.
And in a way, the series is almost smartly designed, and Chisei is such a broken character that other people would question just like you, but she is so beaten down by life and kind of herself that, like, she's like, yep, all right, whatever.
And she's sort of like, oh, this person has shown me this modicum of kindness. I am now devoted, you know, like, mm-hmm. because like you said, that she's so broken mm-hmm. that's enough to just be there, you know? And again, though, I think that is questioned. I mm-hmm. think that is questioned by other people. And then eventually, Chisei wants answers, you know, about things. And it's not just, okay, you can do whatever you want. So I think there's just a massive amount of growth on both of their parts. I will say that even by the end, I don't know if I fully embrace Elias the way that Chisei does, but
I feel like that's if I'm reading it right, I feel like one of the major questions the series is trying to ask is, can Elias actually learn to be both moral and human? Because at points, it is very clear that Elias never has learned to be human. What he has learned is how to emulate what he thinks is human for Chisei. And that's, I mean, not to go into it because of spoilers, but that's one of the major conflicts of the finale is like, yes, I am doing this because this is what humans who are devoted to other humans do for each other. And it's like, whoa, you do not still understand what it is to be human, and you are emulating humanity very badly.
No, I agree. I think that's an amazing point, Al, that there's this, not, and I mean, I didn't even think about the emulation part, but just sort of this, I don't know for a fact that Elias actually regretted his actions. I think he knows that he is supposed to, because Chise was very upset about it, but I don't think that he wouldn't have done it, and that he wouldn't do it again.
And yeah, I think that's one of the questions going on. Can, we've seen that he kind of gets that he has to run this emulator to be human, but can he actually learn to be human? And not necessarily not be Fae or not be his weird hybrid self, but can he at least on some level actually learn to be human, or will he just always just keep trying to fake it till he makes it?
And maybe he will, because I think what we do learn, you know, when we see his, I'm not going to say his birth, his first appearance, and then also his relationship with Lyndall, is that he can learn. Mm. Like, he certainly grow, and he grows a lot over the course of the series. But also, you know, the person that he, up until this point, I guess not person, the being that he has spent the most time with is Lyndall, who is also not a human. And Lyndall makes more moral decisions than Elias would, I think. But he's still a magical being, you know? He's not a Chise who has lived in a very different world.
And he's also a magical being that just occasionally, due to his job, sojourns into the human world and then retreats back to magic land. If he does, sojourns into the human world, that's 10% of his life. His 90% of his life is magic land, where people obey magic land rules and morality.
All right, I just want to talk about Lyndall for a few more minutes, mm-hmm. because he was absolutely, like, one of my favorite characters. And I think that, you know, he is the kind of the caretaker of the dragons. And he also becomes this, like, sort of mentor figure a little bit for Chise. Because early on in the series, and this is one of the things I think frustrated me most about Elias, and Lyndall is not the first person, but he is the person who I feel like does something about it the most significantly, is that, Elias, you're not explaining anything to Chise about magic or about how any of this works, and not, like, doing anything. So, okay, she's coming to the land of the dragons, and we're gonna, like, do some stuff. We're gonna learn some things. You know, he helps her create her staff and, like, start to sort of put her on more of a path to using her power, as opposed to just it, like, coming out in these massive bursts.
I think Lyndall, since he had to teach Elias how to do magic, realizes how Elias learns, and also realizes, Elias, I taught you that way because that's how you learn. You can't assume, like, you're a weird case, and that's why I did what I did to teach you. You can't assume that everybody else learns like you, because the only person who learns like you is you. This is not the universal way to teach people. Well, I feel like the first person that really sparks something is the magic lady.
Yeah, I was going to say, she's the first person who says, hey, excuse me, you're not explaining anything to your apprentice.
But, I mean, she's kind of like a helpful neighbor. Like, Lyndall is like a helpful family member who's like, all right, I have a little more say, I have a little more power than I can say. I'm going to lay down a little law here and make you actually do stuff. She can only suggest that I can make things happen.
And his the way that his magic manifests is through song in the series, and oh my god, just, you guys, if you did not watch this, it's just incredible the way that magic appears in the show. And then, you know, it's about like the halfway point is when Lyndall really like does a whole bunch of magic, and it's the most amazing sequence. It's so beautiful. And this is also a good time to mention that the music in this series is just stellar. Not just the opening and ending, but all of the music. And there's also a lot of insert songs that are just incredible. And they often come up in these very magical sequences. And one of them is, yeah, Lyndall's spell song. Ugh, I still can see it in my mind, even though that was only like the middle point. It's just so cool.
Just because you brought magic, and I have something to segue on. I really wanted to make the second opening the one to win the award. The problem is, the Mayan song is amazing. The problem is, it's the opening itself. The visuals is just a really well done AMV of the series. There's like no new footage of it. It's just
until the last episode.
Yes. But I mean, but the one that they use for, you know, 90% of the episodes is just a really well done AMV. I mean, I guess if it was the difference between them picking a good song and then just knocking something out so they can concentrate on the animation and the show itself, I'll take that as totally acceptable. It just struck me as, man, if you had an original animation as good as the first one, I totally would have probably picked that as my favorite opening of the season.
Yeah, I'd be curious to know why it took, because the final episode has the real second ending. Or what I assume was, you know, that it's completely original, or 90% original. So they finally finished it. I just wonder, what was it? Like, what happened that threw off the course for this opening to take this long? Because, you know, clearly on the Blu-ray release or whatever, it will be replaced and all of that. But I was very pleasantly surprised to see that in the last episode. I definitely, of course, as you, Al, wish it would have happened a lot sooner than that, but it was a nice... I wasn't expecting it at that point because we had gone so long.
Yeah, I had forgotten that it even had a new one. I just assumed it was like, last episode, so we'll do something special.
No, it was an actual opening.
That makes a lot more sense. You know, I think the part that I thought was most interesting, I really thought that Renfred and Alice were interesting characters, because when you see them, they're basically the first bad guys that you meet in the series, and then you kind of learn what their deal is. And I thought that their arc in the story was really unexpectedly interesting. When you get a little more depth into both of them, that was good, and I think they were some of my favorite characters in the series.
I agree. I really liked them. I thought their backstory was surprisingly emotional for me and made me so curious to see them more. Like, I really wanted them to know more about them. I also thought that a character that they introduced much, much later, and I should have brought this up when we were initially talking about magic, that I'm interested in is the witches. So they introduce a witch, and then they introduce that there's, like, a coven. So I'm wondering, like, okay, so what's... They seem to work with curses. I don't know if that's the only type of magic they do, but I didn't expect there to be then, like, a third type of magic in the world.
Well... I think it's just like a different variety of magician. It's just because they can do other magic. Because that one point, the witch who like kind of tricks them and then has to pay them back, she can transform and stuff. I think it's just what they specialize in, what they're really good at, is curses. So they're like, hey, if you know, you want other magic, you know, if you want transformation magic, you might go to a druid. But if you want curses, you come to a witch. Because nobody else other than maybe a mage is going to be able to do half as good as us.
Because I feel as though that group or that concept is not... I think it was thrown in a little too much. I think it didn't get enough exploration in the time that was given. Because otherwise, I just thought the series had such an amazing arc overall. It was such a satisfying ending. I thought it was spectacular. It was intense and emotional and got to the heart of a lot of characters, especially, you know, Chise's relationship to herself and to others, and then, you know, Elias's relationship with Chise. And I know that the manga is ongoing, but this was such a sad... It felt like a fully finished, satisfying story. I feel like even though not everything is answered and not everything is fully explored, like we said, we had like a lot of questions about where characters would kind of go from here, but it just felt like that could be the ending. Like, bam!
Yeah, no, it's clear that the witches were introduced so that the real meat of their story is obviously in a later story arc.
Exactly.
But, like you said, if you had to pick an endpoint, especially if you're not sure you're going to get more series, really it's hard to determine. I would be surprised if, like, there would be anything better in, like, a book or two. This was, like, probably the best place to end it if... You're like, all right, if we never get another season, this isn't a total go read the manga to find out what happens next.
Exactly. It doesn't feel that way. Even though there's clearly more story to be told, you could go so many places with it, but...
Just as we mentioned, there's so much still, like, question mark about Elias.
But I think that overall, it just is such a satisfying piece, and I feel as though... That's pretty rare for an ongoing series. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's rare overall. I think, especially since the trend, there's a lot more of a trend to not animate something until the whole series is finished. Or, oh, it's getting close to the end, so we're going to animate it. And by the time we get, you know, that sort of thing. I think that happens a lot more now. But usually for series that are ongoing, it gets to a good stopping point and you feel like, okay, that, you know, that was good, that was enough. But this felt like it could have just been the whole thing. So I was very impressed by that.
I think it's one of those series that is probably the best kind of pitch for a manga because it introduces this world. It gives you a great, satisfying story, but like you said, it still has hooks. So you're like, oh, there's more? Because sometimes you almost feel a little bit resentful when they just pick a point and like, hey, if you want to find out what actually happens, go read those books over there. With the manga industry in the U.S. the way it is, that isn't as much of a problem as it would be in years past. But I feel... Like, when it soft sells you reading the manga this way, it feels a little nicer. And I sometimes have a little more goodwill to a series that way. But yeah, I think it was a great series. I feel like if they had skimped out on the animation and or just, you know, the detail, both story and character-wise or art and, you know, just atmosphere-wise, this would have been a lesser series, but I feel like and it hit it home on all those parts and definitely lives up to a great manga and stands on its own.
Thanks for listening to another episode. You can visit us online at reversethieves.com and follow us on Twitter at reversethieves, at nartakiRT, and at hisuiRT.